Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein, and this week we're going to be speaking about parenting. I know I get complaints. Last week I got a bunch of calls. Go back to halacha. But I wanted to do this one topic. It's such a public service because so many of the listeners here, including myself, are parents. And so many of us, including myself, know so little about parenting, or so much less than we should know. And you know, we hear about in our community, off the derech, naches, shalom bias issues, even because kids weren't brought up well, or alternatively, you know, kids not getting along with their parents. So again, I said, we have a lot of reach, you know, many rabbanim, most rabbanim therapists would come on. So we did a search and we said, let's find a few really wonderful rabbanim, psychologists, therapists who write about parenting. This is their key area of expertise. Have them come on and maybe you and I will learn something. So we got Dr. Sarah Yaroslowitz. She's written numerous books. She gives classes. She coaches. Fascinating interview about parenting. And now let's go to our guests.
Joining us from Lakewood, New Jersey, is Dr. Sarah Yaroslowitz, who's an expert in parenting. She's written a number of books about it, Parenting, Are Your Hands Full? She teaches about it. She lectures about it. She is a therapist, deals with parents about it. She's a Talmud of the Beis Yaakov. Welcome, Dr. Yaroslowitz.
Hi, thank you very much.
So you have a practice about a parenting practice. What percentage of the parents who come into your practice before they take your courses, read your books, know much about parenting?
Zero. They don't know anything.
So I would like to, I'm a father, and I'm now a grandfather, I've never taken a course, and I'd love to learn what I'm missing. Could you share with us what, you know, some of the aspects, the foundations of parenting are with me as well as the audience listening so we can get smarter?
Sure. Absolutely. So basically the foundation of parenting, the goal of parenting is that you should take 7,000 days and train your child that when they exit the 7,000 days, they should run through their lives the way you would have liked them to. That they should develop the skills while they're with you, which is a short period of time, to be able to grow into what you had aspired for them. And what is that? That they should be Shema Torah mitzvahs and have the proper relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That they should be, you know, emotionally stable and able to form a healthy relationship with a spouse. And the third thing is that they should be talking to you, that they should have the correct relationship with you. Those are the three main goals. Now, there are skills that children need to learn and parents need to teach during those first 7,000 days in order to accomplish those goals. And the skills, there are three of them, and they're built one on top of the other, kind of like the way you build a building. The foundational skill, the most important skill, which gets us through life in general and gets us through the learning process, is being able to handle when things don't go the way we want. In fancy English, we call that frustration tolerance. If a person is able to handle when things don't go the way they want, they will be basically healthy throughout their lives. For example, if I told you you're going to live 120 years in Mitzvah Shem, and mathematically speaking, 50% of the time, things are going to go the way you want, and 50% of the time, they won't. Let's just say, Olam Haza, the way we know it. And you can't be okay when things don't go the way you want. 50% of the time, you won't be okay. That means you'll only be happy. You'll only be okay 50% of your life, which is a terrible shame. But what happens if I trained you and taught you that you could be okay even when things don't go the way you want, then you could be happy and okay all your life? And that's the foundation upon which all of human health is based. Particularly, one very important piece of human health, specifically for Frum Jews, is the concept of obedience, being able to listen and obey an authority. That's what we're all about. So obedience, what is obedience? Obedience is that I do something, not necessarily do I love doing that something. I don't particularly want to do that something because somebody else asked me to, whether it was a Rav or a Rosh Hashiva or the Rabban Shalom himself or my teacher or my mother or my father, somebody asked me to do something that I don't particularly want to do, and I did it, here comes the magic word, anyway, because I was trained to tolerate frustration and discomfort before that. So, for example, if my mother tells me to go take a shower, and I don't particularly want to take a shower, but I'm used to the concept that maybe life doesn't have to go the way I want all the time, and I'll be okay anyway, I'll go take a shower anyway. Oh, so for example, if I don't particularly like to fast, or you don't particularly like to fast, but a couple of days a year, I fast anyway, and I'm okay anyway, even though I have to, that comes from that foundational lesson of frustration tolerance. So now that I taught the child to tolerate frustration, and from there they became an obeyer, they learned to obey and do things anyway, a child who is an obeyer by nature has a much better chance of controlling his impulses or her impulses and engaging in things that they're not supposed to engage in, particularly during the teenage years. So if a child is obedient by nature and is used to tolerating that I can't have everything I want just because I want it, and it doesn't have to go the way I want just because I want it, and I'm obeying others and I'm happy that way because I feel safe and secure because the people who are teaching me are taking care of me, then I'll have a much better chance of holding myself back when I'm exposed to chas v'shalom, the things that I'm not supposed to be exposed to. And we call that third stage impulse control. So parenting is a process. You can't teach a child to be perfect the first minute. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us 7,000 days to do the job, approximately, and we have to build one stage on top of the other.
So this is great because I hear all the time from people, oh, my son has impulse control, my daughter has impulse control, and I wouldn't have a clue, you know, what do you do about that? But you're setting forth an exact set of steps. So now you've basically told us, and I think, by the way, this is for adults too, I mean, handling when things don't work out the way you want. I mean, I don't know about you, but in my life or anybody who's, you know, is a lot of things don't exactly go the way I want. The Mesillas Yesharim says, if 40 days in your life things went the way you wanted, he said, you know, you got your Olam Haba in this world. But
I guess my 50% is pretty liberal. Not bad.
So how do you teach a child, or the child maybe me, to handle, you know, frustration tolerance?
Okay, so the Ribbono Shel Olam sets up a child's development and developmental stages, and he actually runs our developmental brain like a highway. You know, we run along the highway, and the time that children learn best, that's not to say that they can't learn it later, but the time that children learn best to tolerate frustration is when the first time they become aware of frustration as a concept, and that it has a fancy name. It's called the terrible twos. So children become aware of frustration as a concept. Approximately the earliest we see it is about 15, 16, 17 months. And that process, the terrible twos, generally runs itself out by the age of 4. And in those two-ish years are the most precious opportunity to teach a child that life will not necessarily deliver what you want, when you want it, how you want it.
Yesterday, a few days ago, with my little grandson, he builds this tower, it keeps falling down, and he just gives it this huge kick and starts howling his head off.
Right. And you wouldn't respond.
I'm sorry.
And he would be stuck in a vacuum. He would be left in a vacuum. That means nobody's giving attention to the kicking and the howling.
No, but I do give attention.
I know,
I said,
but you wouldn't.
Calm down.
Yeah, right, exactly. But you wouldn't give attention.
What do you mean? I'm not following you.
You would just, you're sitting and learning your Gemara at a table, and he's playing blocks.
You're saying I shouldn't. In other words,
you shouldn't, right.
Okay.
You shouldn't.
Okay.
And he would have no choice but to recalibrate because you didn't intervene.
Is that true?
Uh-huh. And what would happen is you would hear it. It's fascinating to watch. He would self-calm, because the brain can only stay agitated for so long. He would self-con and start building again. And what children learn to do when they self-calm is they become their own problem solvers. And the young brain has a much better propensity for learning anything new than an older brain. So if a child, for example, I'll give you another example. You're in a store and a child wants to buy a toy and you don't particularly feel like buying the toy that time. Or they want a snack and you don't feel like buying the snack that time. And they start howling and screaming because they want it, and you get panicky, because it's making noise or you're embarrassed or whatever. And the child learns, huh, if I open up my mouth and I holler, then I get what I want.
Right.
How does that work in marriage? So the best way to teach this, if you want to do this for your future son and daughter-in-law, these cute little kids who are running around somewhere, you want to teach your child now when they're young that it's okay. It's okay. Things don't always go the way we want. And you ignore the crying. You keep shopping. And eventually you walk out of the store and the earth continues rotating on its axis. It's okay.
So you're saying that a kid throws a temper tantrum, ignore it. Let's say a kid skins his knee on a bicycle.
Ah, that's not a temper tantrum. A temper tantrum is when a child has a disagreement with a parent or is frustrated or angry. If a child skins a knee, that's pain. That's different.
But wouldn't you say
not
the same thing? Like
crying.
Teach the kid how to
handle things on his own? Well, you comfort the child. You put on a bandage. You do all of that. But then if you've done the routine of calming the child down after falling off a bike, and they still continue hollering and hollering and hollering for attention, that's another story. But the average child will be consoled when you calm them down. We call this, by the way, ignore negative behaviors. The Rosh Hashanah for that is I-N-B. Falling off a bike and skinning your knee is not a negative behavior.
Oh, I understand that.
Screaming like a lunatic in a store because you couldn't get a toy is a negative behavior.
So, doctor, tell me if I understand this correctly. When you see negative behavior in a child, if you give it attention, you're basically watering the flower.
It will happen again, correct.
And you're teaching it that it's behavior that attracts attention.
Correct.
Whereas if you ignore it, even though it could be very uncomfortable for the parent, but short-term it's uncomfortable for the parent, but long-term it's beneficial because you're not watering the negative behavior. So it's I-N-B, ignore negative behavior.
And behaviors are like your teeth. If you ignore them, they go away.
Okay, and if you ignore negative behavior, if you don't make them into a issue, and now parents are coming and grandparents, and the kid created basically a little chasana, and he realizes that these negative behaviors actually are beneficial to him.
Correct.
So if you ignore it, he'll resort to other means, which you say are self-calming.
Self-calming, problem-solving. Now, this doesn't happen in 5 seconds. This takes time. Most of the three phases that I have, each phase takes approximately 6 weeks in order for a child to learn that. By the way, I was doing this, but I cannot begin to tell you how many years before it hit me like a ton of bricks. 6 weeks is 40 days. It took me a while to figure out why was I seeing change. The parents would come and they would come. And then all of a sudden we turned a corner and it was 6 weeks. And then we turned a corner again and it was 6 weeks. And I kept saying to myself, this is Mitte number six. What is with this number? I couldn't figure it out until one day it hit me.
Right.
40 days.
So question for you. Can you do this with a teenager too?
So we do it. I do it. Of course it takes longer. Of course it could be more volatile. Of course, I need the parents to be much, much stronger and much more have stronger resolve. But if I coach them through it and get them through it, we do see changes. But there's nothing like doing it when kids are little, specifically before the age of 8. That's what I find. If a child hits the age of 8 and still doesn't understand the word no and that life doesn't always deliver what I want, then it's a tougher call. But I do it up until the age of 18. In my practice, I do it up until the age of 18.
Right. Well, is this no? I mean, you're not real. This is. I think no is a little. Is this the point of saying no to your child, or just ignoring negative behavior?
No. In other words, when I say the meaning of the word no, it means that if I build a castle out of blocks and it falls apart one time, two times, three times, that's a no in my environment. A no means something didn't go the way I wanted.
Right. Okay. Okay. Now, can adults learn this too? By the way, just for me.
you know what everybody says when they go through my program. Usually by, session 3, they come to me and they say, this has nothing to do with my kid. This is all about me. And I always laugh. In other words, basically, if a parent can tolerate the frustration of a child tantruming, if a parent can tolerate the frustration of a child disobeying before they learn obedience, if a parent can tolerate the frustration of a child not going to sleep when you want, or not taking a shower when you want, or not finishing dinner when you want, if parents learn to tolerate frustration, children A, learn by observation, and B, that's what drives the program forward.
No, but I mean to say this, can an adult somehow learn at a later age how to tolerate when things don't go the way they want? Like, is there a way to...
Yeah, if they identify it as a need and they're willing.
And how would they do that?
Not all adults are willing. So There are various ways. People go for anger management help. People go for all kinds of help for that. But I find I can only speak in my world, when parents walk through the 18 weeks of my program, they come out different people because they've learned to tolerate the frustration of their children being children.
Okay. Let's go to the second step.
Obedience.
Like, is that happened just automatically? Now, once I ignored negative behavior, the kid learned how to self-calm. So does obedience sort of follow automatically?
It doesn't follow automatically. It has to be taught. It's unfortunate that it has to be taught, but that's the world we live in. It's a democratic world. I do what I want. I come when I want. I go when I want. I wear what I want. I say what I want, right? So we're raising our children within a culture that doesn't advocate for obedience particularly.
In other words, the world does not believe in telling your child no. Effect.
Right. I mean, listen, we still do have, you know, I still will, if I'll speed on the highway, I'll still get a ticket. So we do have, it's not a completely lawless society that we're living in, but it's a lot more lawless than it used to be. So if you're comparing raising a child in the Tyra world and you set that child against the backdrop of democracy, which believes in all types of liberal freedoms, there's a huge conflict there. So that's why it's so important for our children to learn obedience as a concept in the early years, because they're not being raised in 18th century Poland where there was a czar and a nobleman and authority was in the air.
So when you say obedience, you don't just mean obedience to the law. You mean obedience to mitzvahs, obedience to parents, and really boundaries in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So how do you teach this?
So there are two methods. They're too complicated to, you know, get into this venue, but there's a method for little kids.
Dr. Rothowitz, if Hillel comes to, if a ger comes to and he says, I could teach you the whole Torah standing on one foot, don't you think you could teach us the two levels of obedience in a few minutes?
I could try.
2 feet?
Yeah. I could try. There are two different strategies. One is called hand over hand, that's for little kids, and the other one is called nothing until, and that's for big kids. How to do it is detailed, but the concept behind it is we don't use language. And I'll try to explain. You tell a child to do something. And again, I don't allow parents to give commands in the first 6 weeks while they're teaching frustration tolerance. I don't allow them to give commands because at that point, the child is not able to obey. And it's in order not to be over on lifnei iver lo titen michshol, you wouldn't give a child a command unless you're 100% sure that they can obey. So it's really, really important not to set up a situation of a scenario of disobedience where you say, go take a shower, and the kid tells you no, and you say, go take a shower, and the kid ignores you, and you say, go take a shower, and over and over and over again. Because every time you create another scenario, thousands and thousands of scenarios of disobedience, then what happens is that Adam Nifal Kafi Pulosa, the child becomes a product of their actions. They become disobeyers. So in the first 6 weeks of the program, the only thing I allow parents to do is to say things like, it's shower time. It's bedtime. The shoes belong in the closet. So this way, if they don't obey in that first 6 weeks because they don't know how, then nothing bad happens from a chinuch perspective because you never told them to. So in the first 6 weeks, we make sure to distance the child from disobedience so that when we get to phase two, we can teach obedience in a more smooth fashion. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You don't want to do damage. So how do you teach obedience?
So obedience has two strategies, one for little kids, hand over hand, one for big kids, nothing until, and both strategies involve action without language.
Can I just ask you something?
Sure.
Have people ever told you that obedience in America sounds the most offensive?
Yeah.
Like boundaries sounds like a lot better than obedience. Like obedience sounds a little bit like slavery or like the Stepford Wives. Like it just, you know?
Yeah, it does, but I'm not afraid.
Okay.
I'm not afraid to use these old-fashioned terms because the last time I checked Parshas Yisro, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Yud Beis, did you check recently? Is the page still there? It says, Kabet es avicha ves imecha. I mean, it's very, very clearly.
So you're talking about obedience to parents when you say obedience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which obedience to parents, which will lead ultimately to obedience to your Rosh Hashiva or to your Rav or to your whoever. Why does Rabban Shalom, I remember learning this in high school, why does Rabban Shalom create us with parents? Why aren't we made like the goldfish? He needs us to diaper his babies. Why did he create us with parents? Because through learning Kabbalah's Old, the concept of Kabbalah's Old in general, which takes the first 10, 11, 12, 13 years, we arrive at Kabbalah's Old Malchus Shemayim. This is why the Rav Shlomo made us with parents to begin with, and which is why he put is one of the Aseret HaDibros. Hand over hand involves just walking the child through the action without talking, and through conditioning over and over and over again, the child becomes conditioned that what you said will happen.
So the kid obviously does not want to take a shower.
Right. A little kid
doesn't
want to take
a shower.
You
just pull him into the shower?
You pick him up the way you would a little kid, and you bathe him. And he screams and cries, and you bathe him as if he's not crying, with a smile on your face, and all is well. If there's more details to it,
and what's the,
I can't
what's
involve
the But what is the concept here that you're
attaching the command to the action. You're juxtaposing the command to the
action.
And
what does that do?
It connects it in the brain. It makes us what we call a synapse. My mommy says, and it happens. My father says, and it happens. My mother said, and it happens. My mother says, and it happens over and over and over and over again. And eventually that connection is formed.
So I take it that with a teenager you can't do this.
Correct. Up until the age of 8, we do hand over hand. And then we have something called nothing until, which is a different strategy. It doesn't involve hands anymore. But it involves no language. And it looks like this. You tell a child to go take a shower.
What's the importance of doing it with no language?
Language is not, behaviors don't get learned through language. Behaviors don't understand language. Behaviors are learned through observation. How does this work? The ears, which are on the side of our heads, are connected mainly through the temporal lobe, which is what processes language and is close to the parietal lobe. That's where we learn our math and our science and our geography and our Chumash and our Navi and our Gemara and our Rashi and our Tosfos. The teachers teach through language, primarily. Behaviors, emotion, personality, those are up behind our forehead. Those are in the frontal lobe. They operate differently. They get absorbed through observation. That's the concept of hashpa, right? Chaver tov, shachen tov, right? Why is that so important? Because our behaviors get learned through our environment, just through by observing. And I think, although this has never been proven, that they're near the eyes for a reason. So if you, for example, walk into a room and a child is writing on your wall with a red marker and you start screaming and yelling, how many times do I have to tell you not to write on the wall? Then you're sending the message through the wrong venue. It's like trying to peel an orange with your toes instead of your fingers. But if you were just to separate the marker from the child and walk away, that child would be forced to observe the fact that you separated the marker, connect the dots and say by themselves and learn by themselves, it must be I'm not supposed to ride on walls. So behaviors don't get taught through language, which is why my obedience phase is either hand over hand or nothing until, both of which use a minimal amount of language.
Okay. And what's the impulse control stage?
Impulse control is much, much later. That's during, hopefully, the teenage stage, where that's where kids already experience a little bit more freedom and liberty, and we're not so in control of them anymore, and we ship them across the ocean 6,000 miles away, and we say to them, don't smoke, or don't go into Lebanon, or don't take a taxi, and we hope that through the years of teaching, frustration, tolerance, and obedience, that we will arrive to the point where they would be able to control their impulses on their own. We cannot control their impulses for them forever. We're not there forever.
And define like impulse control, like describe it.
I'm met up with something that I know I shouldn't be involved with. I would like it. I feel pressure from other people that I should try it, and I hold back anyway. There comes your anyway word again.
Right, and the method is, I guess, because since I realize, look, I have to deal with things that I don't necessarily agree with, and obedience has taught me because of that, and I can tolerate listening to things. I obey because even though I don't want, I anyway can do it because I'm used to the fact that I don't get everything that I want.
And I know I'll be okay anyway.
Therefore, I can control my impulses.
Correct. And I know the operative point here is that I know I'll be okay anyway. Life has taught me, my childhood has taught me that even if I don't get everything I want, I'm still okay.
How fascinating. You know what's fascinating? I've interviewed a few other people. Like you hear things like, the most important thing is to love your child. It's like, you know, that is, I think this is just a whole new...
It's a whole new thing. You know, it's interesting. I always say, you know, it doesn't say, v'yahaftes bincha, v'yahaftes bitecha wana.
I guess because it's natural.
Correct, but it does say you have to l'reacha, because that's not so natural.
Right.
So The idea is that when you teach something that's so obvious in a program, the point is when clients walk into my office, the idea is that they should learn something different that's not so obvious. I know they love their children. You asked me, the first question you asked me in this interview is, when your parents walk into your office, what percentage of them know anything about parenting? And I said zero. You didn't ask me what percentage of parents love their children. I would have told you 100%.
I have a question for you. And this is as an American, maybe as a Jew, right? There's something about obedience that scares me. In other words,
because you've been raised in a democratic world.
But it's more than that. Avram is called Avram HaIvri. Kala Olam Be'Ever Echad V'Hum Be'Ever Hasheni. Like, the Jew is taught to be, you know, the dissident, person who thinks for himself, doesn't follow the masses. We're a tiny speck on the face of humanity. Right. And like, obedience to me, like, sounds a little bit like, you know, just like follow, listen, don't think for yourself.
So you're talking about obedience as an adult versus obedience for a child. You see, in order for a child is going through a stage called childhood. That's when the cupcake is in the oven and it's baking. The child is developing. Obviously, every child, once they exit the first 7,000 days of life, approximately, will go off and develop and become various things, depending on who they marry and depending on what their Baruch Shalom sets up for them. But the foundation, in order for a child to grow into that, there has to be some kind of cheshbon of what's right and what's wrong. So you wouldn't want an 8-year-old being a dissident. Avram Avinu was way older than that. You want, in other words, because if an 8-year-old is a dissident,
by the way, you say he's way older. It's actually a machlokes whether he was Ben Arboim, Ben Arboim B'Shmoina. There is a sheet who holds a medrash that he was Ben Gimel Shanim. Pick your Avram.
All right. Okay. But, you know, childhood then was different.
Yeah.
So, you know, Rivka was also 3. I mean, it's just a different developmental stages. So in the developmental stage that we know as childhood, we want to teach them the concept that there is a higher authority, and that namely being the Rabbanu Shalom. And then from there, they find different ways to manifest that. But dissidence also has its dangers. You know, we have all kinds of movements that are, you know, that branch off of who we're supposed to be. So, you know, we need to be careful on that level.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. You know, somebody smart once said, and he says, I forgot who it was one of the Chachmim Yisraelim, he said something to the effect that he said, agreeable people go along with the flow, mm-hmm. and difficult people don't. Mm-hmm. So he said, all change in the world, therefore, would seem to be by difficult people.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. So I totally agree with you. We don't want our kids writing on walls and doing crazy, and we want them to listen.
We need them to. And then once they've passed that stage, then they can develop any which way. And that's what the teenage years are all about. A healthy teenager who already understands that bottom line is that they must, you know, there is going to be an authority always directing them throughout life. But the yeshivas and the high schools, their focus is on self-expression. And that's where the girls learn to express themselves in various ways, and the bachrim learn to express themselves in various ways. And that, if you talk to any mechanech during the teenage years, that's what they want. But they're sitting on that foundation that so far lamasas, the kids know they have to obey. And that got accomplished in the first 8-ish, 9-ish years of life.
This was a fabulous interview. Thank you very much for your time. If anybody wants to buy your books, your tapes, how would they, like, if they wanted to follow up, I imagine you have a website.
Yeah, so the website is www.handsfulchenuch.com.
If somebody Googles your name, Dr. Sarah Yaroslavich,
it'll pop right up.
Yeah.
It'll pop right up, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Hasel Chorah. Bye-bye.